Hello everyone, and welcome to our Friday Forum webinar. I'm Marianne Stumbaugh, Assistant Director of Alumni Career Services here at the Alumni Association at UVA, and I'm happy you have all joined us for this first Friday Forum of our Fall 2013 series. I realize it's not quite fall yet, but it is getting to be that time. I hope that everyone has been enjoying their summer and that you have managed or will manage over the next few weeks to take at least a little bit of vacation. I'd like to go over some administrative information first. It will be helpful if you can have pen or pencil and some paper ready to use because you'll be taken through a self-analysis survey during the webinar. If you're not in a position to write things down right now, that is not a problem at all. Just absorb the information and you can always come back to it later if you'd like to figure out your scores. Our presenter will take questions during her presentation as well as at the end of the webinar as time allows. You can type your questions into the chat box at the lower left of your screen at any time. I am pleased to introduce you to Shizuka Modica, our Friday Forum presenter for today. Shizuka lives with her husband just outside of Charlottesville on a small mountain ridge in Apton facing the Blue Ridge Mountains. In her spare time, she enjoys organic gardening, growing flowers as well as vegetables, and she practices both Hatha and Bikram yoga. Shizuka earned her PhD in higher education in 2007 from the Curry School here at UVA and her master's degree in 1998 from the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and she has been an educator and administrator in higher ed for nearly 25 years in both Japan and the U.S. Shizuka currently works in university internship programs at the university's Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service, where she has taught organizational behavior for the past several years. Shizuka also founded the IMI Institute, through which she offers workshops and coaching services to promote meaningful work. Shizuka says on the IMI website that individual awareness and subsequent deliberate changes create sustainable personal, organizational, and societal growth. Now, here's Shizuka Modica with Find Meaning in Your Work and Perform at Your Best.
Well, thank you for such a great introduction, Marianne, and Happy Friday to everyone who is on the webinar today, and it's a great pleasure to be with you, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule today. And Charlottesville is very sunny and warm, and I'm happy to be inside the office at this time. But let's see, and now, today we will explore four things. Why it's important to think about how we make the meaning of work, and universal principles of meaning-making, how you make meaning in your work through a self-assessment survey, and get your pen and pencil ready, and finally, how you can create a work environment for yourself and others to experience positive meaning-making. Now, this is a lot to cover in one short hour, so this webinar is going to be probably only a starting point for you to think about these topics. But this webinar is going to be very interactive. I want a lot of your thinking going on during this hour. And if you would, please get your questions in as you go through, and I hope to answer all the questions at the end, if not during the webinar. And to get your response, I will ask you to raise your hand, so to speak, from time to time. So would you please find your raise your hand button and then click yes. See if it works for you. Great. Yep. Okay, I'm hearing lots of beings, so I think it works. That's great. Wonderful. Yep. And okay, I'm still hearing things, but that's great. Wonderful. Thank you. Now, are you ready to take this 1 hour journey? If so, again, click. There. Okay. Wonderful. It's working. Technology is working, so that's great. Now, I would like to pose my first question to you, and that is, what's meaningful to you? What comes to your mind? Just hold that thought. Some of you may be thinking, why do we need to think about, you know, meaningful work? It's so elusive. I'm not a philosopher. So But there are several reasons why it is important to think about meaningful work. And before we get to those reasons, I would like to tell you a bit about human being metaphor. And I'm sure many of you have heard about that. It's an iceberg metaphor. And what you can see above the surface is only 10% of the iceberg. And that what you can see above the surface is so-called acting and performing in the way we do our work in the workplace. And 90% of the iceberg we cannot see, that's the thinking and feeling part of us. And a lot goes in to support our acting and performing. So how you think and feel influences a lot in terms of behavior. So the first reason why it's important to think about meaningful work comes from Dr. Viktor Frankl. He is the founder of the logotherapy, and he is also a survivor of Holocaust. And according to him, the demand of meaning is an all-embracing reality for all human beings, regardless of belief or orientation. And studies have shown that the search for meaning is universal among all people, regardless of sex, age, IQ, educational background, character structure, environment, and whether you are religious or not. So you don't have to be a philosopher, you just have to be a human being. The second reason why we need to think about meaningful work is it is highly linked with optimal functioning. So when we find our work very meaningful, we commit ourselves beyond the call of our duties and perform at our best. So meaningful work is sort of equated with optimal functioning. Now, very simple idea, but this meaningfulness is not used often enough as a performance indicator yet, but there has been a movement to align the nature of human motivation and organizational performance. In particular, I am really excited about the rise of positive psychology in the late 1990s and the development of positive organizational scholarship. Positive psychology promotes meaning-making as an approach toward one's happiness and well-being. Now, the word well-being has become a household, name or the word to use along with happiness. And often, happiness and well-being are used interchangeably. But in fact, there is distinction between happiness and well-being. Here's the thing. Well-being can be categorized into two types. Happiness is one type, and the other is meaning. And happiness is defined as hedonistic well-being, which represent our positive emotional experiences. So in a way, hedonistic well-being can be attained by things and activities to seek pleasure or to feel good. On the other hand, meaning is defined as eudaimonic well-being, which comes from striving toward a higher purpose, beyond simple self-gratification or to feel good. Of course, these two concepts, happiness and meaning, they do overlap to some extent. But up until now, research has shown that happiness is associated with good health. But a new study that just came out indicates otherwise. People who are happy but have little to no sense of meaning have the same gene expression patterns as those people who are responding to chronic stress or adversity. And people who have a strong sense of meaning but are not quite happy all the time show a lack of stress response. I mean, this is completely counter to what we have believed before. So some people are already saying that meaning making is healthier than happiness pursuit, and especially at a physiological level. So that's very interesting development. And the fifth reason is associated with work satisfaction. Management researchers have been using the concept of job satisfaction to improve organizational performance for a long time. But and they have developed various factors to assess job satisfaction. Many of these factors are so-called extrinsic rewards, such as better physical work settings, paid vacation, higher salary, or some sort of, you know, bonuses. But these extrinsic rewards do not really sustain our performance over time. What sustains our performance is very intrinsic, internal to us. We are motivated to do our best when motivators are internal, and primary motivational forces that contribute to meaning making happen to be all intrinsic. So, and the last but not the least is something called the post-gross domestic product movement, so post-GDP movement. That questions the established notion of wealth of a nation. In the past, or up until now, our hunger toward material and monetary wealth is being challenged for many reasons. And we are in need of a more sustainable economic model that supports both hedonistic and eudaimonic well-being. So I'm sure there are more reasons, but this is only a few why it's so important to think about meaningful work and how you construct your meaning. Now, simply put, what we're going to cover today is the integrated core of three fields, management, especially focusing on high performance and leadership, and positive psychology, namely well-being area, and existential psychology. Any questions at this time? If you do have any questions, please go ahead and type in, and I will try to answer any questions, especially at the end. Because when some questions come to your mind, please do type in, because you may not remember that. Anyway, switching the gear a little bit. Now, I would like to do a quick visualization exercise now. It's a powerful exercise if I could take sufficient time, but today we do not have enough time, but I would like you to have a taste of it so that you can do it on your own at your leisure. So now, wherever you are, please close your eyes and relax your body. And take a deep breath for a couple of times. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. And let everything go. And pay attention to your breath. Now, think of a time when you found what you did very meaningful. It doesn't have to be work-related. Any activity is okay, including physical activities like your favorite sports. But something that you found very meaningful. Go back to that particular time and space. And just relive that experience. If you cannot recall such a time, you can try to remember when you were in the zone, so to speak. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the expression being in the zone or being in the state of flow. Go back to that particular moment. Where are you? Who are there? What are you doing? What do you smell? What sounds do you hear? How are you feeling? What are you thinking? What are you accomplishing? Just remember what it was like. Now, come back to the present moment and hold the thought that you had. When I do this exercise in person or over the telephone, I ask people to share their stories. And what we come up or collectively is pretty similar. But since we cannot do that today, I would like you to type in a couple of words that sort of signify your, recollection or that experience. So what defines that particular experience when you found something meaningful? I just want to get a quick feedback from you. Well, helping others, mental focus, teaching my granddaughter, helping a friend with her newborn, joyful and appreciated, teamwork and feeling valued, accomplishing tasks, passion. All right, what's more? Sharing knowledge. Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. This is just so amazing. In the little bit of time that we have, all these common things bubble up. And it just amazes me every time I do this exercise. Proud and peace, happiness, teaching children teamwork and compassion with the sport polo. Okay. Performing on stage. Yes, this is just wonderful. Yeah, teaching children healthy habits. A lot is coming in. Yeah, just keep mentoring, right? Wonderful. Being organized and sharing knowledge. Okay, wonderful. See, this is the collective wisdom we have. Without any science or, somebody telling us, what it should be. We all know it. So feeling useful, okay. Having others being open to your knowledge, something that consumes all physical and material resources. Yes, wonderful. So as we share all these stories, specific stories, not just, a few words. But what we come to conclude is sort of represented in this figure. And don't be scared. It looks kind of complicated, but you already know it in a visceral sense. And this is what everybody knows and what everybody does, but we just simply don't use this concept in managing our own performance. Yeah. So let me briefly explain. This is going to make more sense toward the end of the webinar. But let's see if this little pointer thing works. Now, we have these intrinsic motivators that have two components. It's innate psychological needs, which include higher purpose, competence, autonomy, relatedness, learning, creativity, personal growth, and you have your personal values. And these are all intrinsic motivators. And many of the words that you used to describe the incident or activity that's meaningful to you really relate to all these innate psychological needs or your personal values. So if you can satisfy your innate psychological needs, and if you can express your personal values through what you do, you are bound to identify with that particular activity, or in this case, work. And then what happens is you will make positive meaning of out of that activity. And you are committed to what you do, and you consequently perform at a level that other people consider optimal functioning or high performance. And going back to the metaphor of iceberg, so this high performance is our acting and performing tip of the iceberg. And what's left of this blue thin line, all of this are going on under the surface. And this is the 90% of our activities. Although people don't see all of this, or we are even not aware of how we are doing this or when we are doing it. But this is what happens. Now, let's take a self-assessment survey on how you make meaning in your current work. After the survey, the whole thing will make more sense. I promise. I'm not sure. Okay, and get your paper and a pen ready. We will go through 11 statements and one graphic symbol question about your work. For each of the statements in the graphic symbol question, please choose an answer that best describes your feelings and perceptions about your work. Ready? Now, statement number one. Wow. I work for higher purpose. Now, higher purpose is defined as transcendence. People with higher purpose are directed to something or someone other than themselves, and they add value to society and to the organization they work for. So do you strongly agree with this statement or strongly disagree? Just find the answer that best describes your current work situation and pick the associated score to that answer. And write down on your piece of paper higher purpose and your score. Statement number two. What I do for my work contributes to my organization's purpose and goals. Now, here, contribution is defined as the work you do for the organization, and what you do advances the organization's purpose. Do you agree or disagree? Again, write down contribution and associated score for you. Statement number three, I am competent in doing my work. Competence is defined as effectiveness in interacting with your social environment, and you have opportunities to exercise your capabilities. So that's important. And again, write down competence and your score. Don't overthink this, just go with your gut feeling. And statement number four, I am autonomous in doing my work. This autonomy is slightly different from independence, individualism, separatedness, or freedom to do things the way you want, when you want. This autonomy is more of a sense of volition, the opposite of compliance. So you do things you want to do them because the tasks and activities are part of you, and because you fully endorse the actions. You have sort of internalized the value of particular actions. So it is almost like self-expression. And as you know, nothing is truly black and white. So We often vacillate between compliance and volition in doing the same work from day to day, from month to month. But in general, if you can perform your work out of volition, then you are more likely to improve and sustain your performance. And what's so fascinating to me is that the same task can be done out of volition or out of compliance. For example, let's say my boss tells me that I need to call 100 customers to conduct a telephone survey. If I believe in my company's mission, if I know that I am skilled in conducting surveys, and if I feel that the survey is critical in improving our company's service, then I will be happy to call up 100 customers, one after another. But think of a case, if I think the company does not offer a good service, or if I do not believe the mission, or if I am not so good at conducting a survey, I would not enjoy calling up 100 people. I would be probably doing it out of compliance just to earn my money to get by. So when you feel autonomous, you are doing it out of volition. It's not compliance. Using this definition of autonomy, I would like you to choose the best response for your situation. Write down on the paper autonomy and your score. And now I would also like to see how many people feel or strongly agree with this statement, I am autonomous in doing my work. And if you do feel or strongly agree that you are autonomous in doing your work, please raise your hand. Whoa. Oh, this is great. Wow. Yes, I hear lots of beings, and but this is wonderful. Wow. Oh, this is impressive. Wow. This just simply tells me that UVA grads have a wonderful, you know, work environment. So that's a great indicator. Wonderful. Now, moving on to statement 5, I am related to other things and people through my work. We all need to feel connected to other people and other things in the world, and it is a sense of belonging within a community, and you are embedded in a caring community. So. Again, write down relatedness and your score. And what's so interesting about this relatedness is that women have a stronger need for relatedness. And men are human too, so they need to feel connected to other people, but women are more likely to have a stronger need for relatedness. Now, statement 6, I am creative in doing my work. Here, creativity is defined as discovering new ways to define problems or new rules that can adapt to the unexpected. Also, when you change a field or establish a new field, you are considered creative. With this definition, creativity is something you work hard at for a long time. And some people say, like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, he would say 10,000 hours to be an expert in something. So with this definition, creativity is something you work hard for a long time. And it's often attained by more than one individual. So it could be a teamwork, and you can be creative on your own as well. So write down creativity and your associated score. Statement 7, I continuously learn new things through my work. And learning here is defined as a relatively permanent change in your cognition and behavior. You differentiate yourself from others through learning. So building your expertise or competence through learning. Write down your score. Now, statement 8. I personally grow through my work. Let me explain a bit about this personal growth. What I mean here is attaining complexity through differentiation from others and integration with others. Now, as we become more complex, we personally grow. And we differentiate ourselves when we learn new things and build our expertise. But our expertise is of no value if we do not share our expertise with others. We need to integrate our expertise to accomplish something in alignment with organizational mission and purpose. And some of you already indicated when you teach something to somebody or mentor somebody or share your knowledge, that's part of, integration, differentiation and integration. So we all know that. Again, and yet we don't use that, concept to manage our performance. So if you don't feel that you are growing through your work, can you figure out which part is missing? Is that differentiation from others is missing or integration part of it or both? So please write down personal growth and your score. And this is, statement number 9. I express my personal values through my work. Now, values are defined as organized sets of personal beliefs, opinions, and attitudes about what's important to you. Values hierarchically structure a person's needs, desires, and goals according to their relative importance and priorities. If your organization's values are completely different from yours, you will feel sort of dissonant, and you will be mentally in pain, so to speak, and mental suffering, as you know, can result in physical ailment. So how do you feel about your personal value expression? Write down values and your score, please. Now, statement number 10. My work environment supports who I am and who I want to become. This refers to your environmental support for who you are and who you want to become. And of course, the work environment includes the physical things such as, lighting in the room, or desk, chair, computer, or other resources that are offered to you, but also includes psychological support from your boss, your colleagues, clients, and customers. Write down how you feel about environmental support. Now, last statement is, my work is very meaningful. So many of you already said you find your work very meaningful, then you would probably choose number 6, strongly agree. Write down meaningfulness and your score. Now that you have your scores for all statements, let's figure out what to do with these scores. And you can either print out this page 23 slide and scribble in your survey results, or draw this spiderweb-like radar diagram on your paper to indicate your scores for these different factors. The basic premise for this graphic is that the bigger and the rounder the shape of the connected dots, to indicate your scores maybe, the more meaningful you may find your work. So visually seeing your results can give you an opportunity to think about factors that are important to you and how to improve those scores so that you are more likely to find positive meaning in what you do at work. Let's take a look at the example here. This participant A, she found her work is very meaningful, or she somewhat agrees that her work is very meaningful. But if you look at this graph of hers, creativity is very low. It's she got score 2. Yeah. But other things are relatively okay, but creativity seems to be very low. Then she has a choice of deciding if creativity is important to her or not. And if it is important, what she would like to do, she has to figure out to increase that score. You know, but for us to find our work very meaningful, we don't have to score high on all factors. I mean, it's nice, and some people do that, but again, the strength of our need for each factor is different, so only you know how important it is, and you have to decide. Yeah, let's say an artist or Apple's late Steve Jobs, they have a strong need for creativity. So if they have a job where they don't feel they're creative at work, then they've got to change their job somehow. But let's say an accountant. Maybe an accountant, you know, that person might not have a strong need for creativity. And I do believe most organizations would prefer straight bookkeeping rather than creative, you know, Enron type of bookkeeping. So it all depends on profession and the nature of work as well, and your personality. Okay. Now, I would like to turn our attention to the last piece of the puzzle in understanding how we make meaning, and it's all about self-identification. As you can see, in each of these rectangular shapes, there are two circles. One circle represents you, and the other circle represents either work you do or the organization that you work for. The proximity or overlap of the two circles indicates the relationships that you have with the work you do or the organization that you work for. Choose a number that best represents your relationship with your work. Then choose another one for your relationship with the organization that you work for. Are they the same or different? Some of you may have great overlap between yourself and work, but not too much with the organization, or vice versa. There is no right answer here. So this is to simply bring your awareness about your self-identification with work in the organization. And let's say if you're a small business owner, you may completely identify yourself with work in the organization, and you choose number 7 as your answer. And that's just the way it is, being on call 24/7, you have to do everything to run the company. But if you feel that you have work-life balance issues, then you might want to reduce your self-identification from number 7 to, let's say, 4 or 5. And so that's the, you know, gap between reality and ideal. And once you know what your ideal could be, then you got to figure out how to get there from number 7 to number 4. And, well, then let's say that you chose number 1 as an answer. There is no overlap between you and the work or you and the organization. Then maybe you don't like that job. Maybe it's time to think about, you know, finding another work. So this is a very interesting mechanism or tool for us to just to see where we are and where we want to be. Again, going back to this figure, I hope this makes more sense to you now. And all these thinking and feeling are taking place below the surface. And although we may not be aware, but this is what goes on. One thing I would like to emphasize is that particular actions and behaviors that satisfy your innate psychological needs and express our values are different from one person to another and from one circumstance and another. So there is no silver bullet, so to speak. Understanding how you make meaning in your work and identifying the gap between what it is now and what you want it to be is the first step. So raising awareness, and only then you can start thinking about how you would like to change yourself or your environment. This slide recaps what we have covered with our arrows and the metaphor. So innate psychological needs are higher purpose, competence, autonomy, relatedness, learning, creativity, and personal growth. When our work environment supports the satisfaction of innate psychological needs and the expression of our personal values, we identify ourselves with our work and organization. When we identify ourselves with our work and organization, we perceive our work very meaningful. And when we perceive our work very meaningful, we function at our best and perform at a level recognized by others as high performance. Now, with this, I would like to ask you a set of questions now. These questions have tremendous impact on how we organize our own work and others, and how we interact with other people. Now, question number one. What can you do more of to facilitate the perception of meaningful work for yourself? Now, which factors are important to you? And which factors got low scores? And would you like to increase those scores? Let's say if you scored very low on higher purpose on the survey, you may want to review your organization's mission and purpose and see if you can actually make a link between what you do and the organization's mission. Some people cannot find meaning when they do so-called menial work, as my students, you know, always say, and which, you know, sometimes copying or data entry. But if you can make a link between copying or data entry in the organizational mission, there is no menial work, and everything you do contributes to the organization's mission. And this is a skill that you can develop over time if you are not good at seeing the big picture and make a link between what you do and what the big picture is. And question number two, what can you do more of to facilitate the perception of meaningful work for other people? Again and again, I emphasize that there is no sort of checklist or things that you can do across board, because what happens under the surface in each person, we just simply don't know, and everybody comes with different backgrounds. So you've got to think about the entire iceberg 90% of the things that you really don't see below the surface. So this is a very difficult question. But let's say, as an example, if I were a manager, or when I used to manage people, what I focused was I focused on organizing other people's work before mine, because it was more important for me that they knew what their, you know, purpose was, or what the project was, and give sufficient lead time so that they are more likely to feel autonomous and have a can make a link toward higher purpose. So generally speaking, when you give people a very short lead time, people tend to feel done to, and they cannot really find higher purpose when somebody said do it right now. So giving a sufficient lead time is one of the ways to promote autonomy. Another thing that you can do is to allow your people to spend 5 to 10% of their time to improve what they consider a problem for the organization. I mean, some companies already have this type of practice, and they are getting tremendous results, innovation, you know, from right and left. So those are the things that you can do without, you know, spending a lot of money, except the personnel costs. But this type of, you know, work assignment foster pretty much all of the factors that we talked about. Now, question number three. What may be the obstacles to facilitate the perception of meaningful work in your environment? I can give you an example from my experience, and a lot of times people do not communicate well, and communication is always an issue, you know. And lack of communication does hinder our sense of relatedness with each other, big time. So let's say that's lack of communication. Then what can you do about that particular obstacle, lack of communication? Well, what happened at this particular workplace that I was at is that the department manager sort of started a monthly staff meeting during lunch hour with free food. And at the beginning, many people resented that they had to attend a meeting during their lunch hour. But over time, people started to look forward to the meeting. They shared food and stories and, you know, small talks and got to hear what's actually on the manager's, you know, plate, so to speak. So not only the staff meeting helped people get to know each other better and feel connected, but it also provided a clear picture of where the department was headed. This certainly fostered a sense of higher purpose among staff. They could finally see the big picture, and they could see their contribution that they are making. And I would like to say a few words on these two pictures here on the slide. I took these pictures in Yosemite a few years ago, and I couldn't really tell whether a boulder was there first or the trees were there. But apparently these trees had to make do with the environment and find ways to grow around the boulder, because trees, they could not remove themselves from the environment. So my takeaway when I looked at these trees is that even in a challenging environment where obstacle is there for your growth, there is a way to grow around it or with it. And I would like to remember this lesson when I, you know, face a challenging time. Now, next question, what policies and procedures can facilitate the perception of meaningful work? Now, one way of looking at policies and procedures is that they are codified organizational culture. So policies and procedures can tell a lot about your organization. And how it's implemented is also a great indicator of the organizational culture. And an example of a policy may be a performance management policy that encourages personal development or growth. At a performance evaluation time, a manager and an employee sit down together and establish performance goals and development plans in alignment with the organization's mission. Many companies are already doing this, and many of you probably do that as a manager or as an employee. And managers' leadership skills are necessary in managing this type of conversation. And most important, managers actually have to care about each person's personal growth. And in order for you to support other people's growth, you really need to know a little bit about that person and what's important to them. So little chat here and there would help you at the performance evaluation time in terms of developing a growth plan. Now, question number six. This is a big, big question, and I just don't have any answer, but I love, little development here and there that's taking place around the globe. And what would an organization or society look like if we were to measure our productivity and wealth by meaningfulness of our work? So I would imagine the way we organize our work would be completely different. And CEOs would be rewarded for their leadership skills in creating work environments conducive to meaning making. And my guess is that those CEOs would have committed employees who work hard to achieve their organizational mission. And these companies probably would do very well financially as well, satisfying all the stakeholders' needs and aspirations. But anyway, this is a big question, and I am very excited that all the things that are happening at different places. Now, final question to ground us in terms of our thinking. What are your SMART goals for the next few weeks and few months to increase the meaningfulness of your work? And SMART signifies specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and timely goals. Yeah? And these SMART goals that we achieve can lead to a sea of change in the direction we want. And I do believe incremental changes can be transformational over time. So you may not have had enough time to come up with your answers to all these questions during this webinar, but I do believe that we all want to find what we do very meaningful and be at our best. And I hope you will continue your search for meaning beyond this webinar, and I love to answer any questions, and if you have any comments, please type in. And let's see, while we wait for questions to come in, I would like to share some of the... some of the typical questions that I get from other people when I do in-person workshops. They say, which factors are most important across gender, age, ethnicity, education, socioeconomic status, cultures? And I would say competency, relatedness, and autonomy, those three are probably most important because these are the ones that are empirically tested over the past three decades. Based on self-determination theory. So And the second question, are there any other factors that contribute to positive meaning making? Yes, there is. Actually, everything under the sun can go into positive meaning making. And that's one of the reasons why meaning making has not established as a performance indicator, because it is so complex. But what we have talked about in this webinar are really the most essential factors that are contributing to meaning making. So, but if you have, you know, a very important factor other than what we covered, I think you should consider that in terms of managing your performance. And let's see what we have. Somebody said, I have just changed jobs, largely, I think, to pursue more meaning in my work. Very interesting to see my rather abstract thought process analyzed. Very helpful to me. Okay. So, well, thank you. And again, this is, you know, something that you can mull over forever until, you know, you die. And I do this every day. And it's kind of fun to see what's lacking and what I want to do about it. Okay. This person asked, do you have suggestions on how to determine whether it's time, unlike the tree, move away from the obstacle or to continue to try to grow around despite its presence? That is a good question. That is a very question. Just, yeah. But I think if you wither, again, it's a personal choice and personal, there is no black and white. And if you feel that you have done everything possible under your control and yet nothing is changing, and if you feel, if you don't feel affirmed in that environment, maybe it's time to move on. Because feeling affirmed and having sense of volition is very important. So think of which factors are being hindered in your workplace, in your current workplace, and how important it is to you. And then you can decide, okay, this is way too important to sacrifice. Then you should be able to come up with more well-justified reason to leave your current position. But again, there is no, you know, black and white answer. Let's see what else. Okay. How do you deal with negative personalities in workplace that detract from, meaning and relatedness? Yeah, that is, that's where my mindful practice comes in. And it's kind of funny, but yes, people are people, and everywhere you go, there are some negative people that really don't see eye to eye with you. And all I can do in that circumstance is be as positive as possible and protect my interest and my growth. And again, that's one of the reasons why research shows that people change their jobs to leave their supervisors. So that's the biggest reason why people change their jobs, because they don't want to be in that environment. And because a lot of supervisors can exercise power, undue power over you because of the hierarchy. But my, you know, justification to promote meaningfulness of work is, what if the compensation system for managers are tied to how people feel about that person's, you know, environmental management And we human beings really play to the rewards, extrinsic rewards included. And if the compensation system is tied to meaningful work indicators, then I think managers' behaviors, negative, you know, personalities, they will change over time. But we are not quite there yet.
Yep.
Okay, I think
I'm popping in now. We are hitting 1 o'clock. I think we're about done with the questions, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. I'd like to give a big thank you to Shizuka for her enlightening and helpful webinar. And I want to let you know that our next Friday Forum will take place in 2 weeks on Friday, August 23rd, when Laura Dulch returns to our webinar series to talk about stress and time management, just in time for those crazy back-to-school schedules. So thank you again to everyone who joined us today on this August Friday. We appreciate you spending your time with us. We hope that you found Shizuka's information helpful and that you are able to identify some meaning in your work now, hopefully a lot of meaning in your work. As always, we've been recording today's webinar, and everyone who registered will receive a link to the webinar recording in an email later today. Also, please complete the very brief survey included in that email. So thank you again from Alumni Career Services here at UVA's Alumni Association. Enjoy your weekend. Be sure to check out our webinar library for any webinars you might have missed, and we'll see you back here in 2 weeks on August 23rd.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.